something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT.
I've been everywhere, man.
I went to Pembroke for the weekend.
Plus, does love really bite? It sure did back in 88. That's all coming up right now on TNT. There he is.
How's it going, bot?
Good. How's it going with you?
Pretty good. I got a jam here queued up. From 1988.
It's 1988. The year I started at St. Pat's High School in Halifax. We were the French Immersions, the new kids on the block.
Oh, see, I can't play it because I'm talking to you on the other device, so I can't play it. But I was going to play that, I want to know what you're feeling. Won't you tell me what's on your mind?
Who is that? I want to know.
It's a classic, like, one-hit wonder. Information Society, they were called.
That's what they were called?
Yeah.
I kind of loop them in with, like, you spin me right round, baby.
I know, right?
Like, same sort of, like, ghoul pop.
It's a pretty early 80s sounding song for 1988,
yeah.
Right? It's kind of like, that's probably why they were a one-hit wonder, because they were like, okay, we've coming out with this song that sounds like 1983.
They were late.
Yeah, and then Milli Vanilli hit.
Well,
what are we going to do? What are we going to do, 19 Lady Late?
19 Lady Late.
And that's an Information Society, not the best name.
I wonder where they are right now.
I don't know. Is it worth a Google or not even?
I don't know. No. Not really. No. I don't think so.
It's not.
I mean, I can. But, you know, with the price of the internet nowadays, I don't know. Like, if you had... I'm into budgeting these days. If you had limited internet for your life, is that something you would use the internet for?
Yeah, no way.
And it works. It works for tears. It works for rage. It works for sadness.
That would be good. That would be good if it was like you could only rip it for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, crying over like that.
You definitely.
You crying over that?
You'd be thinking way differently. I guess, ingesting online.
Well, my friends, Alethea and Stacy, who live in Iqaluit, said that you get a certain amount of internet per month. So, just because of where it is and the challenges of getting the internet up there. So, you can tell when it's late in the month because suddenly people are working late. But it's because there's plenty of internet at work. So people are like, I'm going to stick around at the end of the workday to like stream something on Netflix because I'm kind of running out of my internet at home. But I kind of like the idea that you would budget and pace your internet usage.
If that includes like what you're watching on television too, like it's the only way you're getting that. That's tough.
I don't even know why we have cable. Sports,
well, how about
I don't know when the last time we turned our TV on was. Do you guys watch TV?
I want to know who started the robbery of the original data for, like, you know what I mean, data usage. Because it's literally the same thing as electricity or any other thing where it's turning on and there's no way it costs as much as they charge you, right?
Oh, there's like, no way.
Imagine,
it's an NFT. Yeah, like, it's a croc.
Like, imagine radio cost when it first was banging. Like, oh, yeah, no, you're going over on your radio.
On your googlybytes.
Right? Like, what a ripoff, man. It's such a modern ripoff, capitalistic way to kind of take away from people. So anyway, I don't know how to... That's a bad move.
We're getting hosed on the internet is what it comes down to. But
yeah, man, like... Right? It's really ridiculous.
Well, and also, like the internet companies establish what the googlybytes are worth. That doesn't work.
Yeah. And then, it's your monthly bill is like rent, what rent used to be.
Yeah.
People spending like $500 a month because they're got to stay going on the gram, keep their gram content up.
I know. Oh, I know it. Don't I know it?
So I'm going to quickly say what I've done in the last couple days, because you've had a whole whirlwind that yeah. we'll get to in a second. But I just ripped over to Pembroke to clear out Lisa's mom Shirley's place, get all the stuff out of there, and get it, I guess, ready to sell. And so it was nice to go to Pembroke and catch up with Clay, Lisa's brother, and Shirley, their family friend. And it was nice. It was good to go back there. And
was it like March break skis and you stayed at the hotel and swam and all that?
No. No, it was like cleaning up skis. Like we were, and sleeping in the house.
Oh, wow.
Just to kind of, you know, get the work accomplished. But a lot of rips to the dump and the Value Village.
Love a
and
dump the, rip. Did her mom go, yeah. or it was best that she stayed at home and kind of no. kept an eye on stuff?
Yeah, I think it would have just been kind of a bummer, to be honest, because it's still kind of a fresh situation, and she's really kind of doing well here, and it's not exactly easy for her mobility to get her there and in and out of the car, and it's not that comfortable there because there's furniture's all gone, so... It just made more sense to just get it over with quickly. And if we're going to go back, have it be more celebratory with the people there as yeah. opposed to like seeing the house, you know.
So who went? Just the two of you?
Yeah, just me and Lisa.
Oh, wow.
And her brother Clay met us there with and Shirley, a family friend, to help. So, yeah, it was a...
Clay's a good solid dude. I met him.
Effort. Mm-hmm.
Clay is one of those like,
that's right,
get out of the way, give me the wrench, like solid helper yeah. guys.
Well, I have to tell a quick story that he told me about one time he was in Acapulco, and the way he talks, he's got the great Valley accent with the cares and the, you know, with the way he speaks. So he was talking about this story where he had to go to the bathroom in this bar in Acapulco. And he walks into the restroom, and it's like it was the men's washroom and then the woman's washroom with the kind of a thing in between. So he goes into the men's washroom, and he sees a spider on the ground the size of his hand, like a huge spider. And he gets the wastebasket to kind of trap it, to at least so he could get it, because he really had to go to get his business done. But as he grabs the wastebasket, the spider rips 100 miles an hour up the wall and over to the woman's side. And he hears his... He hears a scream, shriek from the woman's side.
Ah.
Could you imagine just sitting there and all of a sudden this pie plate with legs comes ripping down at you?
No. A spider's gross. A big spider is really gross. A big, fast spider is disgusting.
Yeah. That knows what you're trying to do. Like when he goes for the wastebasket, as soon as he went for the wastebasket, it's like, yo, I'm out of here. And then freaking sitting there, and it probably jumped right on her, right?
So did he use the restroom?
Yeah, he had to go, yeah. So he went off and just snuck out after. Mm-hmm. What do you imagine, though? It was just a great, quick story that when he told me that story, and just the way he tells it with his accent, I was crying. You know when your stomach hurts yeah. after? And I was like, man, I haven't laughed like that, and I don't know, maybe since the last time I was hanging out with you.
Yeah. We've had some good ones. We've had some great ones, yeah. actually.
The belly laughs. You
sometimes
can't be
they come
beat.
From being tired and... driving, like, say, between, I don't know,
yeah.
Edmonton and Saskatoon or something. Just when the sillies sure. kick in, that's a good time.
Yeah. And it's usually never as funny the next time you try and talk about it.
No. No, tell the story anyway, about the milk. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
So anyway, we got back from Pembroke, and we're here, and we got all... Shirley's important stuff, and So yeah, it was a very quick, but nice.
Those are those are good couple things too, man. Like, I'll help you clean out your mom's house. Like, that's real life stuff. Those are important things that you do together and are there for each other during, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. So you tell the bods about your whirlwind.
I've been sitting on, it's not a lie, I just haven't been as candid with what's happening for a million reasons. Let me start at the start. In the last year or so, we've really wanted to go on an epic RV adventure. The girls are getting older, jobs, activities, school's going to get harder, boyfriends, like all the stuff is only going to start taking up more of their time. So while we had this window where they still like to spend time with us, it's something that we've talked about doing a lot. There are a million reasons to not do it at this particular moment. You know, the covesy and uncertainty everywhere. Also, Shug's in grade 7 now, which is no joke, as you know. But as the fires of Omicron started to rage around us, we were like, I think this is the window. So February 6th, we hit the road in our motor home, towing our half-ton Ford, and went to the States. I had a bunch of work down there, which we kind of used as fence posts for our trip. Like you guys, we're better when we're together.
For sure.
When I like leave for a week, come back for 5 days, leave for 10 days, come back for a week, it almost just kind of throws the balance off. Plus the added layer of like getting a test here before I go, getting a test there before I come back, getting a test here. It just kind of increased the chances of getting it. And then if I did get it and I'm out of commission, then what happens to my gigs and all that stuff? So all things considered, there were 999,000 reasons to not and a million reasons to. So by a narrow margin, we decided to just hit the road. And so we drove to our first kind of stop was the Hershey Chocolate Factory. And in the States, different jurisdictions decide on their COVID response. So it's not like state to state. It's literally village to town to city to village. So if you stop for gas somewhere, it might be real buttoned up. And if you go into a convenience store somewhere else, they might have never heard of it. So we got to the Hershey Chocolate Factory, and Indigo turned to me and said, I don't care if I get it. This is fun. And you realize how much fun has been lacking for everyone, you know, the last couple of years. So to have like limited exposure, safe kind of fun was like, it's the best. And I, I realized how, as I've said to you offline, I was worried that they were becoming immune to disappointment. So something would get canceled, a dance recital or a birthday party, and they're like, yeah, like not even feeling it anymore. And that really freaked me out. So in a way, it was kind of easier to bubble on the bus than it would have been sending them out into the world at school here. As we've seen, your fortunes can change in a couple of days, either way.
For sure.
We went to the Hershey Chocolate Factory. Then we went down to Florida. And our first kind of outing, which felt so strange, was we went to a rodeo in Central Florida. And it was a Saturday night. Or was it Friday night? Saturday night rodeo. And we were outdoors, but we were in a crowd of people, like in the back row of the stands. We were probably the only people with masks on. And it was hosted by a kind of, oh, shucks, you know, you might not know that Cowboys actually started in Florida. And he was armed with like folksy phrases like, but seriously, but there, but by the love of Jesus, we're all here tonight. And we want to thank, you know, Harley's Hats, one of our sponsors, like sort of seamlessly weaving the Lord and rodeo events. But he
and
had
corporate companies.
Yeah, exactly. And he had a real like, oh, that's going to hurt in the morning. Like that kind of like someone would get brained on the side of a grate, and he just had a kind of casual, aw shucks, chuckled, like, oh, we might need some Advil, like that kind of thing. So
just to kind of cushion the blow of the dark, macabre. The kids are in this situation. Yeah, so the kids are out looking at.
The first thing that happened was like the running of the horses and the anthem and American flags and like super turbo patriotic and horses running, galloping at full tilt and crisscrossing and flags and 4-H and like all the things that you might expect. And then you're trying to stay on the bull for 8 seconds. So the first couple guys go, and it's like 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds. And then the third guy goes, and the bull sits on him and squashes him into the gate. And he's Weekend at Bernie's leaning against the gate for a long time. And the guys get a rope around the bull, and the bull runs away with the rope. And it was just a donkey clinic. And the guy is still, like, not moving.
So, he got dragged.
Well, no, he didn't get dragged. He just got squashed against the gate. But there's two other guys on horseback whose job it is to, like, okay, but seriously, we're gonna get the bull. So both of them put the ropes around the bull. And the bull took the ropes from them.
Did he look like he was squished like a bug on a wall?
Yeah, he was like, his back was at a 45-degree angle, and the host was like, oh, it's going to take him a minute to get up. And then suddenly it's been 4 minutes, and he hasn't moved at all. And they're like, but it's not funny. And the girls are kind of looking at us like, is it, do you think? And then you see an ambulance come from behind the thing with lights on, but no sirens. And then like, oh, well, if you look at the history of cowboy and the thing, you know, he's going to hurt tomorrow, that kind of thing. And they're basically scraping him onto a plastic plate and trying to take him away without anyone watching. Like, I hope he's okay. And then Carol was like, should we? And I was like, yeah, we should probably. So we left.
It's just like, what just happened? They could cram him out with a big spatula.
It was like all this pomp and pageantry and ceremony and like Saturday Night Lights. And then gork, this guy gets creamed into a wall and we leave.
And Cotton Eye Joe just comes pounding the whole time.
And then they're like, well, please welcome Todd Yaden, world-class roper. And this truck with a trailer comes out.
Like, just something to take away the attention from the guy.
Yeah, like a little light show kind of disco stuff happening on this trailer. And it's kind of to draw the eye away. Like, Todd, you'd be on a hot standby in case anyone gets gorked into the wall. And then we'll fire you out there, bud. So Todd's doing tricks.
That guy was a lot bigger when he was standing up now than when they put him on the plate.
Oh, man.
All squished up.
Well, it's like when I broke my femur in the car accident. They were measuring my right leg, and I was like, guys, pretty out of it. I broke my left leg. They're like, yeah, we know. We just need to know how long it should be when we put it back together.
Man. That's got to be nice to hear.
Yeah. So that was the rodeo in Florida. We drove through Louisiana and went to New Orleans, which I'd never been to before.
That's a good time. It's great.
Really good time. And it was a Saturday morning. A masked affair. So it was like limited exposure, outdoor fun in all these places. So we didn't, go rip in New Orleans. We walked around outside on a Saturday morning, and I dig it. There's you can feel the kind of seedy underbelly of fun and adventure there. But I was really, really happy to get to see it. It was awesome. And then we went to Austin. Indigo had one thing on her bucket list. That was to hand-feed capybaras.
Nice.
Remember a few years ago, capybaras escaped from the Toronto Zoo?
Yeah.
They are the world's largest rodent, and they are the world's friendliest animal. So you can book a capybara adventure at this Austin Zoo, which is like, run by people that love animals, a kind of a rescue facility. So we wore masks and gave them romaine lettuce. Austin's a good town, too.
It is a great town. Lots to do there. Great music, great food.
I bet in the early going, when you started going to Austin, it wasn't as cool. Like, it's kind of become cool, hasn't it? Or was it always?
No, it was actually cooler back the first time I went there in like 1995. It was just more live music. There's still so much live music, but back in before that, it was just even more so. And, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan playing in one place and, you know, and B.B. King across the street, just like the best of the best everywhere. And
well, I remember Austin Limits, the music series, and they always had like monsters on.
Incredible music. Yeah. I don't think, you know, and I'm not saying that it's lessened, but it's just it's a little more of a corporate vibe now, especially with South by Southwest being so popular. But it's an amazing place. It really is. It's a good, like, if I had to live in Texas, it would be in Austin 100%.
Real estate is bananas in Austin, understandably. So I hadn't considered that. It's like the Sundanceification of that city.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's probably the most, less right-wing of all the cities. You know, you don't feel the toughness of other cities, I find, just as a kind of, you know, going through Texas and you just... State troopers in Dallas, you know, just like the hardcore, scary. You're in Texas now. It's just not as hardcore, seemingly, in Austin. But you know, I it's a great place. Did you get some good barbecue on the way there?
No, you tipped us off to a place. It's there are a couple of things at play. One is if we're trying to put some miles behind us with a bus towing a truck, we're about 50 feet long. So to navigate through the city, to pull over at a place to get a thing, is sometimes not in the cards for us. And then, you know, dietary challenges and people with different palates. And, sometimes it comes together, sometimes it doesn't. But we spent time on SoCo, south of Congress. And that's a really cool strip. And I was really proud to see that a lot of the flagship fashion stores are lines that Carol carries in her store. So we hand-fed capybara
there. And then where'd you... how long were you in Austin for? Just a few days?
Just a few days. Then continued the drive out. Stopped in Phoenix on the way to Newport Beach. And we posted up there at this campground called Newport Dunes for a couple weeks. I actually had to fly back to Austin for a gig. Then we did NASCAR, which I talked about a lot. Then 2 weeks...
Yeah.
I had a gig in Vegas... Then we drove to Nashville. I flew back to Vegas for a second gig, flew back to Nashville, and then we drove home over the last few days, but stayed in. There's a campground called Liberty Harbor Campground in Jersey City, about 200 yards from Manhattan. And it's basically a campground that's owned by the Liberty Harbor Marina and Ferry people. You're basically paying for a big enough parking spot to park your rig overnight. So we unhooked the truck and bombed over to Manhattan and bombed around with our Nova Scotia plates, bombed around through Times Square and drove to Manhattan, went to Magnolia Bakery, got some cupcakes going. So it's awesome because Shug wrote an essay about the educational benefits of travel. And I've often wondered if they remember things or absorbed or the lessons that we're hopefully teaching them landed. And they did. She remembers everything. And it's easier to show than tell in some ways. Or, you know, you can absorb a lot more by seeing things. People that live close to the bone and people that live on the street and things that we don't have in our neighborhood that is really important. An important part of the world for them to learn and know. It was well, great.
I still remember New York when I went. I was 12 or 13 or something like that. Right around the 88 or And it still sticks to me like glue, all the memories of that. Just when you see such a drastically different place and it's just so busy.
What did you go for? Baseball?
No, just for fun. My like sister family? Jenny and her husband Dave at the time. Yeah, Jenny and her husband at the time, we just decided last minute, Jet and me and them ripped down just like on a whim, drove down. We stayed at a cousin's place because...
yeah, of course. Ronnie would have cousins
there.
Yeah,
my father. Yeah, so we stayed at a cousin's place and then we went into the city. But I just remember how I just couldn't believe the amount of people and just the culture shock of even coming from Toronto. It just was so dense. And I think we saw like, I don't know if it was, it was a guy got hit by a car because he like ran out in traffic.
Whoa.
And it was a pretty decent accident. So like seeing stuff like that, I was like, whoa, that shocked me. And the amount of, this was in 1988 or something. So there was like Times Square was really greasy back then.
Yeah.
Like, super, not a place you go to hang out.
Who was it? So was it Rudy that cleaned it up? Or was it Ed
No,
Koch?
I think it was, I think it might have been Koch because it was late 80s, early 90s when they just started putting everybody that was homeless on a bus to Jersey.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of boroughs around it that would say, yeah, they all just came here.
Well, we saw two bikes hit each other head on. But it's so... The thing that always fascinates me about that city, and I do love the energy of it and was so pumped to be there after a while, it's the logistics of we run a restaurant, we don't have anywhere to store stuff, we're going to open up the sidewalk and have a cold storage underneath.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, I remember the first time with the band when I went to New York, and I was staying in my hotel room, and I remember... It was still, that was 95, I guess, so it was still a little more grease to it, more crime, definitely, but I remember hearing, like, in the middle of the night, just a woman coming, screaming, going, help, 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 like, running by, screaming help, and
terrifying.
I'm like, wow, that's insane. Being impressed, I got 20 floors in the air, just hearing it going by. I'm like, whoa, man, this place has got some hardcore scenes.
It was hardcore, and yet I felt more at home and welcome and comfortable there than I did in Vegas. Vegas to me feels like, because everyone is transient on the strip anyway, it feels like anything could happen. No one would have your back. No one would care. Everyone would watch. I mean, my Vegas experience is kind of different because I don't really gamble. I don't love to go out crazy late. Like all the things that it has aren't really things that appeal to me. We did take the girls to see the Michael Jackson Cirque show, which was wild. And something happened to me that has never happened before. We deliberately booked seats in the back row. We wanted to be kind of last in, wear masks first out, like all that stuff. And just as the curtain was happening, an usher came over and said, "Is it just the four of you?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Follow me." And he walked us down the center aisle to the front row of the second section. So about, I don't know, 150 yards closer to the stage, which was so generous and awesome. And watching their eyes kind of pop out of their heads at seeing this, the Cirque and the Michael Jackson music and all that, they really... kind of went down a Michael Jackson wormhole, and we watched the entire 1995 sit down with Oprah Winfrey. But difficult conversation to have, right?
That's of all places in the world to stop. That's a classic.
I know. And it was the 1995 sit down at Neverland, and where he hadn't done an interview in like 12 years, and he put all the rumors to rest. But having to
denial soup and salad sandwich.
Well, so they're like, Michael Jackson's awesome, right?
Yeah, man.
It is a simple question, and it is hard to navigate. Like as an artist, yeah. But he definitely was a complex person. I didn't watch. What was the last one that you and Timbo watched?
With the documentary?
Yeah.
About the kids that came forward?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the allegations after allegations. I mean, taking kids for the weekend away from their parents, like just and sleeping in the bed with them and right. all that stuff. Like, that's just, I don't care who you are. That's not happening with
It's
my kid.
No, it's obviously awful. And one of them could describe his birth.
Like that
right?
alone. Well, it's just all kinds of disgusting behavior that he liked to do to these kids. And every kid said the same thing, like the same kind of stuff. So, I was like, okay, that's enough of that. Like, how can you get a pass after that? But he's getting a pass every day.
Well, it was interesting.
He's too valuable. Is that what it is? Like his music catalog is too valuable to the music scene that's just continual passes. Like he's James Franco or something, right? Like some people somehow, I don't know how they do it, but they skid past the cancellation button.
It was interesting. Well, Chris Brown?
Yeah, sure. Like, I don't understand how it happens where some people can just kind of keep doing that stuff.
It was interesting watching this Oprah special because it was before much of it had come out. Like, it was back when people were just like, he's got some strange behaviors. And he was kind of swatting these rumors down like flies. It was before social media, of course, and it was before the internet, of course. Was it? Yeah.
The internet?
Yeah. So
the internet. Well,
I mean, 95,
96 is when it started going.
Yeah. So he
chat
was
chat sites and whatnot.
He was still
waiting
like
for 10 minutes for a download.
He was still talking about like stories in the Inquirer and how bizarre they are and how there's no truth to any of them. So it was before he'd really been nailed on any of the stuff. But watching his reasoning and explanation for his strange behavior was like, oh, that's how your mind justifies it, because it's your dad's fault. You were never given a proper childhood. He talked about like wanting to, sometimes he would hide when the Jackson 5 plane was about to leave because he didn't want to go. He just wanted to be a kid going to the concert with his friends.
And how about his dad still getting paid at the end of the day more than everybody's, and owning everything, the contracts that they were under. Like, it's just, but again, it makes sense if you grow up in that kind of uneasy environment that, and you don't know what up is down in terms of entitlement with life or morality, when it's just all getting thrown around. Makes sense that he ended up bent, you know?
Definitely. The thing that struck me when I watched This Is It, though, and I watched it when it came out, however many years ago that was, and that was the, like, towards the end of his life, he was trying to mount this, was it Michael Jackson 50 or something? Like, this big tour. We were so used to him being a pajama limo jumping freak that I'd forgotten how completely in control of his artistry he was. So you can't ignore the decisions he was making, because he was very able to speak up for exactly what he wanted in a musical context, right? So that's kind of selective memory. if he was kind of pleading to not be aware of the decisions he was making elsewhere in his life.
Yeah, for sure.
Alas.
And that's probably why he was popping pills like Pez too, right?
Yeah.
To kind of put up this escape from reality.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
But as a, it was neat. As a Cirque show, like the acrobats and the dancing and, I mean, straight bangers. You can't deny that.
No kidding, for sure. Definitely.
And you watch that, like, these dancers can do the moves, but then when you watch the videos of him doing the same moves, he just had that extra, cha-cha-cha. It's almost, it reminded me of you when you're Phil, like all that cha-cha-cha, not like, it's not like words, it's sounds that give it a rhythm and a cadence, like Shamon.
Well, he had incredible rhythm to the point where he would create click tracks or percussive stuff that the bands would play to.
Wow, I didn't know that.
He wanted certain accents to be known when you're playing it, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yep, definitely. So let's take a break. We'll get back to her in 2 seconds, eh, bots?
Take a break, let's get back.
Like the wind through my tree.
Patrick Swayze had a deep bag of tricks.
She rides next to me.
He really, he's really laying into it.
Leads me through moonlight, only to burn me with the sun.
The sun? Listen to the lyrics here.
You kind of threw that away.
She's taking my heart. But she doesn't know what.
Okay, hold on. That's the best line yet. She doesn't, like classic Southern, she doesn't know what she's done.
Let me hear it again.
Want to hear that again? Listen.
She doesn't know what she's done.
She doesn't know what she's done. Listen.
Wasn't
taking my heart.
Here.
She doesn't know what she's done.
He's saying it like, you know, like Bonanza. Like, she doesn't know what she's getting into.
Yeah, but isn't he from Australia?
No, Patrick Swayze?
Yeah.
No, Patrick Swayze?
Yeah.
No way. He's like classic Southern American.
Going to the Google.
You're going to the Google? Like,
this
isn't
is
he
like
from
when
like,
I thought Walking on Sunshine like was Canadian.
Like Arkansas or something?
Is he? Yeah, American actor.
Yeah.
There you go.
Where is he from? Biloxi?
Yeah, Houston.
There you go.
Wow.
So, but it's like the doing the grass. Didn't.
He doesn't know what she's
here, listen.
She's taking my heart. But she doesn't know what she's done.
Doesn't.
But he,
Do you think that like Donovan would have thrown that out? Like, we don't do doesn't here? Like,
I assume he was told to lean into his heritage. He had a deep bag of tricks, though, man. Good actor. Like Circa the Outsiders. Played Derry,
yeah.
Right?
Definitely a good actor, for sure. 100%.
Maybe that was his sharpest knife.
The acting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the singing is average at best.
Definitely, the singing's not great. It's like if we put Edwin from My Mother Earth beside Patrick Swayze and like go down the list of what they had and what they didn't have. Like Edwin could sing maybe better than Patrick Swayze, but Patrick Swayze could sing better than Edwin. Or
why?
Patrick Swayze could act better than Edwin.
Why is Edwin who we're comparing Patrick Swayze
Because he's kind of a Patrick Swayze looking mask.
Is he?
I'd say he's the most Patrick Swayze Canadian I know.
Really?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to look him up too.
Yeah.
He's from Earth.
Edwin, yeah.
Was he
Edwin,
the guy from Newfoundland, right? No.
No.
Oh, I'm thinking Brian.
I think he might be from Peterborough, like the Tana brothers, but I'm not sure.
Okay, but Brian took over for Edwin, right?
Yes.
Yes.
But Edwin's back.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
He was the lead singer for the Canadian supergroup Crash Karma.
Yes.
Who was in that?
Yeah. With Mike Turner, former OLP.
Wow, okay.
And Jeff Burrows from Tea Party. It was a legit supergroup. I think it was the bod from The Watchmen, I think, was in there too.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The bass player. But yeah, definitely a little bit of everything in that group.
Here's something you should know.
What?
iMother Earth announces 2022 shows with both their lead vocalists,
that's
Brian
right. They're
and
doing records. They're doing full albums, right?
Yeah. So are the Tana brothers there in iMother Earth?
Yeah. Jag and Christian.
Yeah. Are they good dudes?
Great dudes, yeah. Very cool. Jag is one of the most prolific Canadian guitarists there ever was, I would say. Very talented.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look at Edwin.
Yeah, see? Swayze-looking mask.
So why did Edwin leave and why was Brian hired? Like, what happened?
I don't know. I think it was kind of like the classic growing pains of a band when, you know, one guy just kind of becomes a little bit, I don't want to say pushed aside, but, it, you know, be kind of goes on their own. And it's tough to go on when you're that person in the band, when it's like, because as soon as you become the person that's what the others would consider the weakest link, it sucks because like you're constantly the brunt of all the problems, you know?
Oh, is that
so?
Is that what Edwin was?
I think so. And, you know, and for whatever reason, it doesn't matter why, you know, but it happens. I mean, it happened in OLP a couple times where the other three kind of are seeing things a certain way. And it's just, if it's not all the same page, then it just starts to become friction and awful. Being in a band is tough for that because sometimes it can just happen out of nowhere, you know. Sometimes it's not for, it's just a feeling that just kind of, it's more to do with hanging out than to do with music, you know.
I'm sure.
But I think in the big picture, it's just a very difficult thing because you're dealing with a marriage of four different or five or six different, whatever, people. And it's very similar to a marriage because it has to be cool every day or else, you know, it doesn't take long if you're not having fun to want to go home, you know?
Well, especially living in a confined space. And killing 22 hours a day.
Yeah. Oh, man. Believe me, I know what it's like to want to be home.
Yeah.
When you're on the road.
I also think, like, if I know there's 9 more weeks of something, I start to feel suffocated and panicky, right?
Yeah.
And, like, imagine being on one of those, we're on a world tour for the next 18 months.
Oh. Well, that's cool if it's in front of people and you have momentum on your side, but when you're like touring for 3 months straight and you know there's not that many people there and your guarantees are crap and you're not taking home that much money, that's when it's like, what, hold up, stop the truck. Yeah, you imagine being out there and you're not a kid anymore and it's just like you're not, you know, you don't live anywhere because you can't afford rent, you know, that kind of style. Or you live together. It's just like, it gets difficult. It gets really hard. Even though you're a band playing the show and the people are singing along, like you said, that extra, the other 22 hours is everything. And you better be making money or else that 22 hours is going to be really tough.
Yeah. That's why I always think the way up is the good stuff. Because you don't know what's ahead. You're hungry. You want it. You're working together for something. And then once you get it, whatever it is and however you define it, then what?
When you're young and you don't have a family and you're in a band, like, don't stop. Like, I think Alex Van Halen told me that. It was a great piece of advice that he gave me on our tour in 1995. We had been a band for like 2-3 years at that point. And he said that. He said, like, look, you guys are young. You don't have wives or kids. You should tour straight and write straight for 3-5 years. Like, you got to give it your all. And that means, like, if you're not on the road, then you're in the studio. And when you're home, you're not taking time off. You're actually practicing or working on your live show. So you can give yourself the best chance to try and propel the future. Because if you give it for that 5 to 7 years and you have a couple hits and you build yourself up to reasonable venues, that gives yourself some chance for longevity as opposed to just like not touring really, you know.
Man, what solid advice.
Becoming a live entity, something that is as exciting as when people listen to your music on the radio. If you can create something special live, then that's as important as everything. But yeah, you have to really grind that out, and it really makes a difference. For sure.
You were wise to accept and curate advice from all these veterans whenever you had the chance. You often had the ear of these people, didn't you?
Definitely. And you know, when I was that type of person that, like, I picked, I was a tradesperson. I am a tradesperson. Drums are my trade. And it's no different than plumbing. You have to be social to be a successful plumber. You know, you have to, there's other things surrounding the actual job that you're doing that you have to kind of be aware of. And the hard work that goes first, it's like when you start a business and you just have to keep doing the stuff that's not fun a lot.
Amen.
Yeah. Amen, amen.
Amen.
Speaking of Amen Corner, it's the Masters Golf Tournament week. That's a big deal for me.
Is it?
I do like it.
So when do you start watching the TV? Do you watch Thursday or you just wait till Sunday?
I'm watching it already just to see the place. Like, it's my birthday is the 7th, right? So, like, my birthday is either baseball starts on my birthday or the Masters starts on my birthday. And this time the Masters starts on my birthday, so that's solid.
Exciting.
But that, I think that has a lot to do with it. Baseball and seeing the Masters on and around my birthday just kind of got things rolling.
Makes you horny.
Makes me horny.
Means summer's on the way.
Yeah, true. That's the other thing, right? Because it's actually, there's no more like, oh, another month of snow. Like, that's it. If it's going to snow, it's like a crazy haphazard incident at this point.
I remember arriving in town on the day baseball season started. It was the most, and this is, I'm an East Coaster. I've seen a lot of reckless drinking, but this was the most, first of all, most vomit per capita I've ever seen in my life, like Jay's opening home opener.
Yeah, it's just people getting land-based.
Yeah, oh, man. And, like, it's that foamy draft barf. Oh,
God, yeah.
Just violently ill in daylight. Like, that's not something you see much.
Yeah,
those dudes.
That one where it's just like instantaneous. Big, huge flow, like a opening up a fire hydrant. That one.
It's like a Bubba Boyish, but out the other.
It is a Bubba Boyish,
but out the other end.
For sure. Did you have like street parties ever?
Not around really, you? No. Did you?
No, but I've been to a few parties that were like street parties, and it's like that. The Bubba Bubba Boyish in the streets. Or bush parties, like when people are all just congregating in the woods. And if you like journey away from the bonfire and towards the trees, you start hearing the Bubba Boyish and the people pounding and all that stuff. Oh,
like nature's soundtrack. Yeah. I feel like when excitement is driving, sometimes like humans can't keep up with it, or they can't pace themselves accordingly. Like first nice summer night, it's a bush party, everyone's having fun, there's a big fire, that's it. You're going down.
You become Terry. You go into Terry mode, where you disappear hammered in the woods. Your thing stopped. You're recording? Well, let's take a little 5-seconder here. Hold up. Hold up.
Is this Mutt Lang?
Yeah.
Another List song. Here's a topic, and we're going to examine it from all four sides. By Mutt Lang.
Stripper jams? Full on stripper jam.
Not now.
Well, in some... Maybe at Popular Girl, this is probably still...
Yeah, it's still Berlin. I haven't thought about Popular Girl in so long. Okay, guys. Dakota guys.
Okay, hold on here. Hold on. Do it again. Okay. Let's start it off.
Okay, here we go. Can you give me the reverb so I sound extra wet? Okay, guys, d'accord, guys, c'est vendredi soir, it's Friday night at Popular Girl. Do la soirée all night long, chicken finger, taters, and maudit, only $5.99. Remember, if you're gonna throw the loonies, guys, keep it in a roll. We don't want anyone's eyes getting burned out with loonies and doonies. Precious yellow stash first on the stage, Avril Lavigne.
Do you think twice? Just touch and see.
It's 1988. There's a dance at St. Pat's High School. It's a Much Music video dance, and that song is banging.
Yeah, and when you're that age, it's pretty intense, that song.
It's an end of the nighter, for sure.
Yeah, like you're not like joking around laughing. All of a sudden, you're kind of scared. You're
locked in.
Right?
But also you're trying to like, are you guys going to McDonald's after? Whose car are you going in? Can I go in your car with you?
Yeah.
Is that what you guys did after high school dances, go to McDonald's?
My boys are in that. That's it right now. But now it's like... I can't relate musically, but like that would have been the jam when we were kids.
So what do they have dances?
No. Well, COVID's crushed everything.
Yeah, right.
Like, because John's halfway through high school and he hasn't had normal high school yet.
Oh, that's
because
brutal.
It's like so crushed.
Is it opening like, now, though?
What's that?
Is it opening up now?
Well, in a way, but like still, like it's pounding still. So like they all wear masks still and try not to gather at lunch or whatever.
Exactly,
so, yeah,
it's opposite of what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it's close, but there's no like, I think all the social events are kind of gassed because of this stuff. So yeah, 2.5 years or whatever the hell it's been. Just grinding her out, but it'll come back, I guess, some kind of semblance. Maybe senior year, to be able to like take a mask off in the hallway. No, we gotta come right back one more time.
What other 88 jams you have, bud?
Right here, bud.
You're about to be possessed by the sounds of MC Rawface. DJ Easy
Rock. Oh no. Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
This could have been the beginning. Is this the beginning of J-Rock?
It should be mandatory basketball warm-up jams.
Yeah, right?
Right?
I can just see like the 88 Chicago Bulls practicing to this.
Yeah. Yeah, my friend John Cherry had a Chrysler Spirit. Bombing around in the Spirit, listening to this. Solid jam.
It's just some good rhythm with some never-ending like screams in the background that just... Right? Like it's non-stop.
Background screams go a long way, though. Like that, hey, ho, hey,
yeah.
Ho, like that rocking ship of call-outs in the background. I dig it.
Yeah.
Okay, so get this, Tags. You ready?
Okay, I'm going to can this here. All right, yeah.
You know, I do some work in the United States of America.
Sure.
And as a result, you have to file in both countries.
Yeah. Each state, even, right? That's the biggest pain.
Yeah, I suppose if you were a touring band playing in different states, you'd have to file appropriately. Yeah. In my case, I tend to do work in one state typically. Also, I have my company in Canada. My company is allowed to work in the states, so it's a little complicated come tax time.
Okay.
So get this, bud. It had to file in the United States of America. It had to pay the IRS some money. The only way to do this is with a bank draft. You can't just send a check. You have to send a draft. So it's guaranteed funds from your bank.
Of course, yeah.
You can't send it. It's always a little disconcerting sending it from Canada because you can't send it with a tracking number because it goes to a P.O. box and you can't send anything to a P.O. box that has any kind of tracking number. So you can't send it express mail or by courier. You have to just mail it. So you're mailing guaranteed funds out into the world, and the phone number for the IRS doesn't work from Canada. So you can't even call and say, like, did you guys get it or anything?
Yeah, it's a roll of the dice.
It's a roll of the dice. All this to say, I get a letter from them a couple of weeks ago saying, you owe this amount of money that I was really surprised to hear that I owed.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because it was lower than you thought.
No, it wasn't. No, it never is.
That's it? Really?
It was like, oh, that's unsettling. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
wow.
I hate that. Yeah.
So
I had one of those a couple of years ago where I was like, God damn, wow.
Like, are you sure? Yeah. So here's what I actually did. When I sent the thing in the mail, part of me was like, I have no way of proving that I sent this thing other than, yeah, no, I sent it. You should have it. So I took a video with my phone, which is time and date stamped October whatever it was, Hey, there's the amount. Here's the serial number of the thing. I'm going to lick the envelope on the video, flip it over, show you the address of the thing, and show me putting the envelope in the mailbox. So I actually have proof that I sent it.
Mm-hmm.
Good thinking, right, bud?
Sure, yeah.
Because otherwise, it would just be my word versus theirs, and I will never win. So I had actually forgotten that I did that, but I went back through my phone and was like, wait a sec. Not only did I do it, I have a video of it. So I've been Nancy Drewing this bank draft for the last couple of weeks and basically asking my bank if anyone could anyone else cash it if it's made out to a specific thing. And they're like, no, it had to be them. So I think that institution is just so big that the right arm wasn't talking to the left arm. So it was cashed. My bank was able to find out, but just the boom wasn't caught up with the echo.
So it's dealt with, but it was a little scary for a second.
Yeah, but like you know how they always say if you're writing a screenplay or you want to copyright something, mail it to yourself and don't open it. So it's like time dated, and you could prove it in a court of law if you had to. It's just so rare that I think in that kind of paranoid, you know what I should do way. But hey, I got a lucky bounce, bud.
Yeah, you're better to be safe than sorry, as they say.
Wait, that's a great expression.
Really? You think?
Yeah. Say it again.
Yeah. Well, I'll write it down, actually.
Say it again. It's better to be sorry than what? How did you say it?
Then better to be safe than sorry.
True story.
Hey, listen.
Listen.
Let's take it out. This episode... with a little fast car from 1988.
Good chatting, bud.
Good chatting, bud. Let's let it have it. Everybody loves Tracy. 1, 2, bring it, baby.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Myself, I got nothing to prove.